And welcome to another episode of Ninjas and Bots, a comic book podcast that covers the IDW runs of Transformers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on an alternating basis every Saturday morning. Unless our middle-aged brains make us forget to publish, that's fine, it happens now and then. Who is us? I am Lane.
And I am John.
Hi, John.
Together we are Wild Stallions. I always want to say that. Whenever there's I am this and I am that, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But we're not close enough to the whole air guitar thing, yeah.
Yeah. So I have a correction I wanted to do from a Uh-oh. Couple weeks ago. I you already know about this, John, but so that I can show my face on this podcast again. Okay, so when we had our guest on, David, we were talking about the Pretenders, mm-hmm. the Transformers. Yes. And I started singing. And I had mixed up the Pretenders with the Proclaimers. And I am so ashamed because I love that song and I knew it was the Proclaimers. So I just want to do that little correction so that I can, stop lying awake at night and thinking about that. Because it's been a few weeks and I'm getting kind of tired. So just saying.
I think you didn't lose any face, or at least not much face over the whole thing. I have such little head for popular music that I knew Pretenders sounded off, mm-hmm. but I didn't know what was correct and figured I was just wrong. So it was fine.
Yeah. It started with a P. It ended with an ERS. They're kind right? of UK. I mean, it was close enough.
Proclaimers are a whole other toy line.
Yeah. All right. So, speaking of toy lines, tonight we're covering two issues of the Transformers. We have Escalation number 3 and the spotlight issue of Ultra Magnus. And John is leading our discussion, so take it away.
We're going to do Ultra Magnus first because it came out 1 week sooner. So as I tab over to my notes. Oh, actually, before we get into the issue, like... Mm-hmm. I meant to say this at the end of our last Transformers recording. We have made it through a year of Transformers comics.
Ooh, nice.
So at the end of Escalation 2 and 6 shot, that was the end of 2006. Wow. And except for the Zero issue, which came out a few months outside of the regular publishing schedule, that was a January through December. That was a calendar year. So how do you feel about where things are going so far with our first year?
I think it's amazing, and I think people who are picking up the IDW Transformers that first year must have just blown people's minds, at least I'm assuming. I would have loved to have had my thumb on the pulse. No, finger on the pulse. You don't want to take a pulse with your thumb because it gives you false readings. A finger on the pulse of the comic books world back when they were coming out fresh, because that would have been interesting to see what people were talking about. But yeah. I think it's great. It's great first year.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I get the impression looking back that it was not as well received at the time as we are receiving it now. Mm-hmm. Because, well, I say that. I could be wrong. Furman has 2 more years on the book before. No, hold on. Look at my calendar. Furman has 1 more year and a half on the book before they move things in another creative direction. So I'm not sure at this point if Favre was turning away from him or if things were still going strong as far as reactions go. Infiltration was such a huge outing, and I think it should have energized anyone who was reading. Certainly, we loved it.
Yeah.
I think the Escalation, we'll talk about this as we go through issue 3. I think Escalation is not fully going the directions that I want it to go, but I can see what Furman is trying to do. And we'll talk more about that in 20 or 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm having a great time and looking forward to where we go from here.
Yeah, definitely.
So before we get into our spotlight on Ultra Magnus, let's have a little spotlight on Ultra Magnus.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever seen Ultra Magnus's toy. But the truck cab part is just a white Optimus Prime toy.
Sorry, apparently my cat is not an Ultra Magnus fan. Here we go.
Oh, evidently not. But it transformed exactly like Optimus Prime. It was, of course, all white. And the American Ultra Magnus toy is a redeco of a Japanese toy that was called Powered Convoy. So it was basically intended to be Optimus Prime with armor.
Okay.
The armor, of course, comes from the trailer, which is a different kind of trailer. It's a car carrier. You could actually put one or two of the standard size Autobot cars in it, and Ultra Magnus could drive them around. I never had him. I can't say I really wanted him. The fact that it was an Optimus Prime cab just always made me feel kind of like it was a cheap toy, but I don't know. In the fiction in the 80s, he first appears in the UK comics that were building up to the movie. He and a couple other Autobots come back from the future to stop a Galvatron who has also come back in time. The crazy thing is when all these future Transformers traveled to the present, they displaced the same number of Transformers, including Optimus Prime, but no one in the present day understood what happened when the displacement happened. They just thought Optimus Prime blasted out of existence.
Weird.
So we spend 6 or 8 issues thinking Optimus Prime has died.
Okay, so that's it's kind of like a you're keeping the Cybertronian what's the word where you're keeping it equal from one side to the other.
Conservation of mass.
Wasn't what I was going for, but that also, it'll come to me.
Okay. When I was reading this to my little boy, who was like, I don't know, 9 at the time, he was kind of traumatized by the story. So Optimus Prime was believed dead. Eventually all that works out. He was touted in that story as being the future leader of the Autobots. Then of course we get to the movie. And the whole idea of him being the leader is undercut by the fact that he can't open the Matrix, which Hot Rod, of course, gets and takes over being a leader. you can see him be Rodimus Prime's chief lieutenant throughout the 3rd season and into the 4th season, which was the Headmasters anime. Relatively early, though, in that series, he is blown apart by Sixshot. So he, Ultra Magnus and Sixshot were sort of poised as opposite numbers in the early episodes of the Headmasters anime. And then Sixshot, you know, continues to be awesome as Ultra Magnus continues to be dead.
Is it homeostasis? Is that the word I was thinking of? I don't know. Something like that. But being blown apart by Sixshot is nothing to be ashamed of because he's a big scary dude.
He is a big scary dude. And that he had to break out a secret 7th form in order to get the drop on Ultra Magnus. The Headmasters anime, of course, had Scorponok as the big bad. And even though Ultra Magnus never fought Scorponok in any notable way, the fact that they're both in the Headmasters anime probably helps to inform why this particular spotlight issue does what it does. One thing about Ultra Magnus as a character, I've always kind of thought in the cartoons, and he had like zero personality. In the comics, he's a fierce warrior and he will never give up no matter what the odds until he's dead. And I think he actually does get killed by Galvatron in a future set issue. But in the cartoons, he's just kind of this dude who passes on Rodimus Prime's orders, like Will Riker, but less interesting and less bearded.
Does he still sit down the same?
Stepping over the chair.
His like hydraulics.
As tall as he is, he might just do exactly that. Because he is a giant dude. His toy does not have any articulation except his shoulders. His arms move at the shoulders. But anyways, I like his IDW comics version because they dig into that Soldierite mentality and they augment it. He becomes this like more of a person because he's this hyper soldier, hyper officer kind of dude. Not especially likable, but still more interesting. So, Spotlight Ultra Magnus was released January 17th, 2007, starting our 2nd calendar year of Transformers comics. Written by Simon Furman, art by Robbie Musso, colors by Kieran Oates, letters by Neil Uyatake, edits by Chris Ryle and Dan Taylor. The two covers both have Ultra Magnus just standing there. The Robbie Musso one has at least him standing dramatically. As opposed to the Klaus Stravinsky's one where he's just tracking down Swindle. He has his little tracker out looking at it. What did you think of whichever cover you had?
Let me pull it up here. I should have had it up and ready, but I got distracted. I had the one where he's just kind of standing and has the tracker. Even though he's not doing much, I like the colors, like the dark reds and then the bright greens. I thought it added some, at least a little dramatic contrast with the lighting. So if it had just been him like on a, you know, white background or something, that I probably wouldn't have liked it as much. But considering he didn't really have any articulation in this toy, I mean, you can't really blame him for just kind of standing there.
Yeah.
But he does look fairly menacing.
Yeah, menacing. It definitely conveys that he's a giant, solid dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I like it as a cover.
Okay. So we open up and we get our opening narration. Even in war, there are codes of conduct that must be abided by. And when there are transgressions, enforced. In this respect, he is the law. Though an Autobot by allegiance, he fulfills a largely autonomous role, investigating, assessing, and, if necessary, punishing those who cross the line drawn in the sand. His name is Ultra Magnus. And on the planet Zull, Ultra Magnus has finally caught up to Swindle, one of the Combaticons, for trading in critical mass weaponry. Swindle has taken refuge in a supposedly impregnable fortress, but Magnus has, well, I guess, impregnated it. I'm not sure that's how that word's supposed to work, but we're going to keep on going. There is some fighting as Ultra Magnus takes out some aliens who were protecting Swindle, and Swindle tries to fight back, but it doesn't last long. On Magnus's ship, the arrested Swindle tries to wheedle out of his situation, but Magnus is determined to take him back to a Decepticon tribunal. Until, that is, Swindle offers information on Scorponok. You see, it's illegal. Agreed by Autobots and Decepticons together, it's illegal to share Cybertronian science. The whole transformation thing is for Cybertronians only. But Scorponok has this habit of finding and exploiting technologically advanced and morally ambivalent species, using them to develop new deadly variations in weaponry. So, despite his misgivings on the idea, Magnus does decide to let Swindle go in exchange for information on Scorponok, and the hunt is on again. The hunt to Nebulos. Remember that planet? We saw Thunderwing wipe it out, but that story's like still like 29 stellar cycles in the future, and we're in a little bit in the past, so Nebulos is doing just fine. On Nebulos, the Zarek Consortium is a corporate front for a group of scientists known as the Cranium. They answer to one Mo Zarek, who Ultra Magnus figures is the link to Scorponok. Ultra Magnus infiltrates the Zarek Consortium with a hollow matter avatar, looks like a Nebulan. He knocks out a key figure or two as he moves from floor to floor, changing to match their appearance each time. And finally, finding the labs of the Cranium, Magnus discovers that Cybertronian technology has been applied physically to the body of a Nebulan. The body is laced with servos, trauma buffers, hydraulics. In other words, they've created a transformable man.
Yikes. Magnus,
yeah, yikes. Magnus trips an alarm, though, and realizes that all the techs who are in the room with him are wearing special glasses, and they can see that he does not really exist. His hollow matter appearance does not show correctly on their visors, so he withdraws his cybernetic intelligence from the avatar just as they attack him, but he still feels their blasts back in his truck body outside. However, since Scorponok likely knows he is present, he throws surprise out the window and drives headlong, no pun intended, into the base. He meets some resistance, of course. They were just drone soldiers, though, so he gets past them quickly and gets inside and is quickly confronted by Scorponok in his giant green and violets. Or violence. Or both. Normally, in this kind of situation, Scorponok would just quietly exit and find the next planet to exploit, but he is on the edge of something major here, so he's going to stand and fight. That's, however, when Mo Zarek runs in to try to stop the fight so that Scorponok does not destroy what they've built, and Scorponok accidentally kills him with a scorpion tail blast meant for Ultra Magnus. And we see that Zarek's fallen body is also cybernetic. In a rage, Scorponok smacks Ultra Magnus aside and leaves through an artificial wormhole generator. It's untraceable, and now that he's gone, Ultra Magnus swears he will bring Scorponok to justice. We also get a
Justice.
We get a two-panel epilogue where it's 29 stellar cycles later in the present day, and Ultra Magnus has captured Swindle once again. But Swindle, once again, wants to deal. The end? Question mark?
Nice. Okay. So yes,
Ultra Magnus with his giant shoulder pillars. I don't even know what those do, but they're there.
Yeah. They definitely add some height to him. I mean, right? It seems like it would also cut down on his peripheral vision, but, you know.
He already has, like, a little tiny head on these giant, massive torso. And yeah. His shoulders are there in the way. So, I don't know. It's an interesting look.
I feel like most Autobots and Decepticons, they can't see their feet anyway because, like, their chests stick out so far, you know? So that, you know.
Like that one cover of Captain America where Captain America's chest sticks, like, a foot away from his face.
But, yeah, that was my first read of Scorponok, and I thought he was pretty cool.
He is pretty cool. When the Marvel series starts getting very consumed with headmasters and target masters and other masters, Scorponok takes a bit more center stage. Mm-hmm. So he's more important in the latter half of that run. But this is his first appearance here. First appearance of Ultra Magnus. First appearance of everybody, actually.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that there are laws and agreements between the Autobots and Decepticons that are enforced. So,
yeah, I was thinking that.
Yeah, this Tyrest Accord that Ultra Magnus mentions is going to get mentioned and invoked a number of times over the course of the series. So I expect we'll find out more about it. But essentially, Ultra Magnus is bringing in a Decepticon on behalf of the Decepticons.
Right. I had to, like, read that again the first time. I'm like, wait, he's taking them to the Decepticons? So I thought, okay. All right. Yeah, that it surprised me, but I like it that they can at least agree on some lines that aren't to be crossed in their with their species.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
These fleshy creatures that are defending Swindle, are they about Swindle's size? I guess they are. They come up to Ultra Magnus's like knees. So they're mm-hmm. smaller, but they're not like tiny humans.
Right. Yeah. I was just surprised. I mean, I don't know if they were protecting Swindle much out of loyalty or just like a see him as a business partner, maybe. But
yeah, that's the impression I got. Like Swindle sought refuge here. The guy said, sure, we'll help protect you if for whatever reason. We don't really know.
Yeah. And to their credit, they do the best they can. It's not like, you know, they see Ultra Magnus come in and say, you know what, you're on your own, dude, and hightail it out of there, which is what I would have done.
Which is they what actually, I would have done, exactly.
Yeah. For the most part, they actually stand and fight as best they can. So good on them.
Swindle pulls out an R-Infinity accelerator, draws its energy from the heart of a collapsed star. Megatron's fusion cannon, the original descriptions of his abilities, is that his fusion cannon was supposed to draw its energy from the heart of a black hole. So very similar concepts there.
Huh. Interesting. Ultra Magnus kind of, his personality, it reminded me like a kick-ass loner cop is mm-hmm. how I read him.
He's very much a cop. He and Prowl are different kinds of cops, but they're very much both cops.
Yeah. He reminded me a little bit of Six Shot, but with less of the fear
tactics
surrounding him from everyone else and more of a personality. Mm-hmm. He just had more, he had some of that stoic strength that I first read in Six Shot.
There is a very subtle hint about how this issue is going to connect to the larger plot. Mm. There's a word usage on the page. Okay, so Ultra Magnus, Swindle offers to give him Scorponok info. We have like a couple of pages where he thinks about Scorponok and thinks about whether he's going to give in. There's the page where you see Scorponok's head in like a display. The next page after that, that starts with the mutual aspect, says that after Scorponok is done, he carefully erases all trace of his machinations and moves on.
Oh, machination.
That's the big M on Earth.
Oh.
So how and what and everything about that, I don't remember the details, but I'm pretty sure that's an intentional connection there.
excuse me. I was surprised when Scorponok accidentally shot Zarok,
mm-hmm.
that he seemed to show genuine remorse and not so much just like, oh no, I had so much work that I've just lost, but he seemed actually kind of remorseful in that.
Yeah, that was interesting. And he was determined to fight Ultra Magnus to defend the science or whatever it was he was working on until that moment. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, what have I done? Zarek, Magnus, this is your fault. But then Scorponok just bails.
Yeah.
So I don't know if Zarek's body is what he was super invested in, since it is a cybernetic body and destroying that is what upsets him. Yeah. Or if there was something more personal there.
Yeah, I was wondering that as well. The fact that he used his name and maybe he, instead of saying like, oh, you know, what have you done? I've worked so long on this, but he called out Zarek, and it almost gave him, like I said, the feeling of like, it seemed like he felt remorseful or had a bit more of a personal
connection.
Personal connection. I might just be reading into it wrong. It might have just been, you know, how they drew it and they didn't mean it that way. But it made me think that, oh, Scorponok has some more layers than I thought he would have when I first came into this. I still sometimes think about some of these big characters. Like, for some reason, I was thinking of him like the Dinobots, that he might be, you know, just Scorponok, I'm big, I'm here to destroy things. But he actually was a fairly oddly sympathetic character for being a Decepticon.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, but just in the little bit I've read of him.
Yeah. And to possibly add to what might be going on there, in the original cartoons and Marvel Comics, in the original toy, Zarek is the Nebulan who bonds with Scorponok. He transforms into Scorponok's head.
Oh.
That was the original concept behind the character. So whatever Zarek is doing in this story, whatever Scorponok is doing on this planet, there may have been a connection there.
Gotcha. So Scorponok lost his head.
Scorponok, he shot him. He shot his own head. That's weird. with all the headmaster stuff that's floating in the background of the story, because it's very little of it is said flat out. I mean, the fact that they've turned a person into a transformable man is as close as we get to the idea. But there are hints that are dropped, like the fact that the scientist group is the Cranium.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know exactly what's going to happen here, but I like that he continues to tease elements of Transformers mythology.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that Ultra Magnus had to withdraw his mind from his Hollow Matter avatar.
Yeah, it made me wonder if it's a case of, you know, if they die in a dream, do they die in real life? If they die in their Hollow Matter, like, are they dead?
Because I had always thought of the Hollow Matter as more like a peripheral instrument of a computer, not I'm going to move my processing from one location to the other.
Yeah, more like a projection rather than a transference.
Right, right. So that was weird.
Yeah.
Also, that blasting the Hollow Matter would have a feedback back at his body.
Mm-hmm. I also was surprised, and it made me wonder how far away from, you know, his actual body a Hollow Matter can get from, you know. He got pretty deep into the facility, going through different layers and levels with basically blast doors. I up until now, like from reading Infiltration, I thought maybe the Hollow Matter avatars would have to be within a certain distance, and maybe it still is a certain distance. They only have a certain range, but it seems to be a bit further away than I thought it was.
Yeah, he goes, because he's parked pretty far off away from the building, and he goes down into the building. So it's not just distance, but like potentially interfering materials.
Right.
I have to wonder now about the Autobots on Earth, and if they're just a lot less experienced with their Hollow Matter avatars, because Ultra Magnus seemed to understand that he should not be wearing a creepy smile the entire time that he's infiltrating the building.
Yeah. He, sorry if you have to like clean up my clearing my throat. I still have a little bit of a scratchy throat from being sick the last week or so. But, anyway, I forget, what were we saying?
The creepy avatar smile.
Oh yeah, I was thinking that he seemed to have it down pat, and especially being able to change on the fly, basically going in from one room into a different room. He thinks, oh, I have to have a different security clearance, so I have to change my appearance. So
I think that was just cool stealthy spy moves. Like, I'm going to take over this dude. It reminds me a lot of the Chameleon in the first Spider-Man issue. He goes from being the scientist to the janitor to whatever he needs to be to get through the building.
Oh, have you ever seen the movie? Oh,
no, I didn't see that one. Was that
my memory? It's got Denzel Washington and hold on. I have to look this up. But it's a cool movie where there's an entity that travels between touch from one person to another. Denzel Washington. Let me see. Hold on, I have to look this up. Because it was really good. And I should have thought of it before I brought it up. But that's what I do. Fallen is what it's called.
I don't think I did see that one.
Yeah, it's really... For one, it starts out with Thalias Koteas. I love him as Casey Jones. So that immediately dragged me in. And I love Denzel Washington. And
with a name like Fallen, it sounds like there might be like a demon or fallen angel aspect to it. Is that what the entity? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But yeah, it travels by touch. And so Denzel Washington's character is trying to track it down. And he'll be walking through a crowd. And I think they're in New York City or some other large city. And it just keeps passing from person to person, and it's a really cool scene. But anyway, sorry, we kind of digress there. Fallen.
That's good fine. Movie. Fallen. Yeah. I will have to look that one up next time Mindy wants to watch a movie.
Yeah, from 1998.
Very good. Okay, so we get to the part of the story where Ultra Magnus is driving toward the building, and there are those three drones outside. He says, suddenly I'm wondering about that bioengineered Nebulan, and how perhaps Scorponok's intent is to take the synthesis of Alien and Cybertronian to a whole other level. Now, I know what that could mean from a I know Transformers lore perspective. I don't know what Ultra Magnus means from his perspective of what he knows in the story. How did you read that? Or did you read anything into it?
I wasn't sure. Basically, all I have with Nebulous and what's going on here is I wondered if Nebulous's upcoming destruction is related. Because it doesn't seem to be on the surface, because it was just, you know, Thunderwing coming in and basically destroying everything. But there's a lot of planets out there, and the fact that Thunderwing showed up here so soon after this happened. Was there some sort of was someone trying to destroy the technology that got started here? And just, yeah, I don't know if there's a connection between what happened in this issue and a deeper reasoning for why Nebulous was destroyed.
That certainly would make sense, because it's, you know, from a, I don't know what Transformers are except for what this comic has told me. Why would you use Nebulous in that story and then use Nebulous in this story? You know, it's the only two connections we have to the planet are that Thunderwing is going to destroy it, and here we are investigating science on it. So yeah, that connection does seem to have implications.
Sounds like a mystery for Nightbeat.
So we talked about the death of Zarek. So Scorponok just leaves. As a continuity note, the last two panels line up with Optimus Prime's multi-screen Skype calls in the first issue of Escalation when he gets to Earth. So the Ultra Magnus talking on that comm at the very end of the issue, he's the same conversation. So we're basically present day at this point at the end of the story.
I think that's all I had for this issue.
So I have a quick question.
Yeah.
It occurs to me at the reading that you've done in the Marvel series and just whatever other Transformer stuff you have experience with, when I say things like headmasters, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. A few months ago, I wouldn't have, but I've read enough of the headmasters, because basically they just paired up with humans who were used as like the heads of some Transformers, right?
Right.
So that I actually did know. So I'm proud of myself for that.
Okay. Just making sure, I wasn't assuming knowledge that maybe we didn't both have. But yeah, they, so the idea of the transformable man here is like, oh my gosh. But yeah, the idea that they could turn into something transformable and bond with a Transformer.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So well, I think in the Marvel ones, they're basically just kind of tucked down inside of an encasement that would turn into a head. But here it made it seem like the biological being actually transforms or does something kind of that should result in some goopiness, but
yes. And on the Transformers Chronicles, they talk some about the possible body horror that's not being talked about in the concept. Yeah. But yeah, there should be some squishiness, and they're just kind of sidestepping that. Any other thoughts on the issue?
No. I love how even these spotlight issues, even though they can be self-contained, if you like, you won't miss a whole lot if you don't read them. But reading them adds so much richness to the story at large.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're gonna. I think it's interesting because they are bringing in characters that we have not seen yet. It's going to be a little while before we get a spotlight on a character we already know. And then I'll be curious to see how that gets used, you know. When we started this, I mentioned that the original Spotlight series was intended to be 5 issues long. We have had 5 issues now. I don't know if they're the same 5 issues that he originally had planned or what. But Shockwave, Nightbeat, Hot Rod, Six Shot, and Ultra Magnus makes 5. And all of them, I know how all of them feed into the story. So they could be the ones he originally planned. I just, I don't know.
Interesting.
First appearance of Ultra Magnus, of course. Swindle is one of the Combaticons. They make Bruticus. he is, as his name implies, kind of whiny on the cartoon, trying to get his way out of things. And Scorponok, who is a city-sized Transformer as a toy. He and Metroplex are of a size. Fortress Maximus and Scorponok are of a size. So
huge.
Huge. He's a bit smaller here, more like the cartoons depict him. The cartoons depict him more like the size he is here. This is also the first and only appearance of Mo Zarek. He does not come back after this. He is actually dead 29 years ago now. But the story concepts that he represents will continue to live on. Main takeaways from this story as far as what's being seeded, what kinds of things is Scorponok developing? I mean, we've talked about Transformers, and longtime fans will probably suspect all of this is related to some Headmaster ideas. New readers might not make that connection, but either way, exactly what that's going to look like and what the story is going to do will continue to cook, and we'll have to continue to wonder about it for now. And yes. Ultra Magnus, it's going to be a little while before we see him again, not like years or anything, but also not immediately. Like, gotcha. We're going to see Nightbeat not rot in 5 minutes. but it's going to take a little longer for Ultra Magnus to come along.
Okay.
All righty. Ready for our second issue?
Yes.
Yay. Escalation 3 came out 1 week after the other book on January 24th, 2007. The story is by Simon Furman, art by our regular ongoing artist EJ Sue, colors by Zach Atkinson, letters by Neil Uyetake. Edits by Chris Ryle and Dan Taylor. As the Autobots begin to probe the mysterious abduction and fate of Sunstreaker and his passenger, Hunter O'Nien, Megatron gets hands-on with the escalating Decepticon infiltration strategy on Earth. Having upgraded to an immensely powerful new Earthform, Megatron sets his sights on the breakaway Soviet state of Brosnia, and one of the many facsimile artificial humans carefully integrated into that particular hotspot. Things are about to go ballistic. Phase 2 continues. But not that phase 2.
Yeah.
All right. In this breakaway Soviet state of Brosnia, Georgi Koska is arguing with a fellow officer over whether they're going to act in the face of the Federalists trying to reform attachments to Moscow. Koska assures him they are not going to roll over. And he drives off to a meeting with... Megatron. Turns out Koska is not Koska. Koska is only a facsimile. He's only human in appearance. And so Megatron transforms to handgun form, which they make a big deal out of this. He, you know, with the mass displacement and the size change and everything else. Koska uses handgun Megatron to blow a hole in an oil pipeline that evidently is piping oil from Brosnia out to Russia. With the Russian forces on their way to investigate, Koska is instructed to gather his rebel forces while the other Decepticons with Megatron, Blitzwing, and Skywarp go into camouflage mode. Back at Arc 19 in Lake Michigan, Prowl is surprised that Optimus Prime wants to call in more reinforcements. He thought that with his own unit of officers and Prime's added presence, that would be enough. Ironhide speaks up a bit out of turn and says he wants to continue investigating Sunstreaker's abduction. But Optimus Prime looks at him and says, no. He wants to keep watching for Decepticon activity. So Prowl gives orders to the other Autobots toward that end and pulls Ironhide aside to have some words. We don't exactly see those, though. In Brasnia, Russian armed forces have arrived and discovered the sabotage of the pipeline. Brasnian rebels attack, and Koska uses Megatron to blast apart one of the Russian tanks. On the Arc 19, Ratchet finds Jimmy Pink and Verity Carlo looking over the remains of Not Sunstreaker. Jimmy has figured out that the nature of the ultralight alloy could lead them to the manufacturer, and Verity suggests they use the Autobot computers to narrow things down. Ratchet agrees, but there is a camera spying on them. In Brasnia, increased Russian forces are rolling in, but Megatron has an invisible Blitzwing lying in wait. The Autobots are monitoring the brewing conflict and suspect Decepticon involvement. They've even figured out that the little handgun that Kroska is holding is probably Megatron, probably using Ore 13 to achieve the change in size and mass. Prowl recommends a direct response to quell the conflict, and Optimus gives the go-ahead. The Brasnian officer in charge of their forces commands a halt. He intends to sit there and look menacing, while the diplomats figure things out back where diplomats go to figure things out. He expects all of this is going to resolve without any further violence, because that's how these things normally do. But Blitzwing has other plans. This is, after all, called escalation. Disguised as a Soviet tank, he fires on the Brasnian tanks. The Brasnian officer reports in, and after a direct order, he has his forces return fire. As I said, escalation is once again the word of the day. Four Autobots teleport in via an orbital bounce. We have Optimus Prime, Prowl, Jazz, and Wheeljack. Optimus's trailer opens up to base mode, while Optimus himself rolls out as just a cab to go find Megatron. The other Autobot's goal is to capture the facsimile alive so they can use its DNA and genetics to figure out what this whole facsimile thing is. Blitzwing sees Optimus approaching, and Megatron orders him to take the shot when in range. Skywarp is ordered to go bring Astrotrain and find the other Autobots at the scene. Meanwhile, Arc 32 arrives in orbit, carrying Nightbeat and Hot Rod, whom we've met recently, and Hardhead, whom we haven't. They're ordered to stay on the ship, but Hot Rod's like, no way! He wants to get involved in the action. Hoo-ha! I never understood hoo-ha, but hoo-ha! On Arc 19, the humans have narrowed down the metal source to two outlets, in Beaver, Utah and Fort Wayne, Indiana, so they are ready for a road trip. But Ironhide, evidently the one who is spy camming on them, shows up in the room and says they're not going anywhere without him. So we've got three fronts. We've got the Autobots heading towards the Decepticons heading toward Autobots. We have the space Autobots about to come into play, and we have the humans and Ratchet and Ironhide investigating Sunstreaker. All of those things on a cliffhanger as we end our issue.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I'm glad they made a big deal out of Megatron becoming a gun, because that mass thing bugged me and still bugs me in the earlier comics.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all just glossed over and ignored in the comics and cartoons.
Yeah. And even though they don't explain it here, at least they nod toward like, yeah, this is something that shouldn't be happening, but it's happening, so deal with it. I'm totally okay with that. It's like when it's just like, oh, yeah, he was able to cramp down to handgun size and somehow doesn't still weigh 500 tons or whatever. So the fact that they just, a little bit of word salad to brush it aside, that's all I need.
Yeah, just kind of, give an explanation, which is, I think, new to the franchise with this. Mass displacement is a phrase that Furman invents here. And, nice. I'm not sure if the effort Megatron takes to transform is something they're going to harp on very often, or if that's just kind of like being used here because it's an initial introduction to the idea and they just don't think about it later. On that note,
the effort is just because of the mass displacement, right? It's not like,
right.
Yeah.
Shrinking himself down to a gun.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, I was initially confused by the opening narration saying Megatron's new form is so much more powerful because, like, one, a handgun seems less powerful than a tank, but also I wouldn't have expected new alt modes to change your strength level.
Right.
But with the mass displacement and Or 13 and the really huge blasts that he continues to achieve even in small mode, I can see how they might could describe all that as more powerful.
Yeah, maybe the smaller barrel size of him and this gun, like all that power coming through something that's handgun size.
Like focuses it.
Right.
Yeah.
Possibly. Don't know.
Skywarp is called Skywarp, but he's colored like Thundercracker throughout the issue.
Oh, I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, Skywarp is black like a black hole, and Thundercracker is blue like the skies where thunder happens.
Okay.
That's how I know this thing.
Though I did think about when Blitzwing was in chameleon mode, I'm like, well, people are still going to see the giant tank treads that just kind of stop, right?
Yes.
And because they're in the snow. But
I think it's one of those if you know where to look kind of things, because the right. geography seems a little bit spread out. But yeah, he's just sitting there. It's like whenever in Star Trek IV, when the Bird of Prey lands in Central Park, it makes a huge dent in the ground.
Yeah.
Okay, Optimus Prime is annoyed at Ironhide.
Yeah.
And then that makes me sad, because they're supposed to be mm-hmm. bros.
Yeah.
But also, it's not really explained.
I wonder if he's annoyed because Ironhide is reminding him that he still has a soldier out there that he hasn't recovered.
Okay, I like and that.
So I don't have any, other than Optimus Prime's personality, you know, I can't think of another reason, but that also, it also isn't quite jiving with the fact that he won't let him continue to search for Sunstreaker. So I don't know. Maybe it's I need you here and I can't spare you for, you know, what might be just a body recovery mission. And he doesn't like that he has to, triage his, you know, his plans, his goals. Like, I have to let this one go so I can work on this one. But I'm just spitballing here.
I wonder if it's the fact that they brought in humans.
Possibly.
And Ironhide and Ratchet are the ones who are most, and Bumblebee are the ones most directly involved in the humans being involved. But I was flipping back through the previous issue to see if Ironhide and Optimus Prime had any interactions that would reinforce that, and they just don't. Well, actually, no, at the very beginning, Optimus Prime's friendly, understood Big Red, no one thinks otherwise. What about, so I don't know. Hopefully we'll get more explanation in the next issue whenever we see them interact more. If they do, because Ironhide's going after Sunstreaker.
Yeah. I do like that Ratchet doesn't put up as much of a fight anymore when Verity and Jimmy are trying to convince him to do something. Because it used to be, he's like, nope, we can't do that. Nope. And he's like, oh, gosh, fine. You know, he just kind of goes with it now.
I know the question here is, after my recent clutch of indiscretions, do I really want to stick my neck out again? I guess so.
I love Ratchet so much.
This is the game we're playing.
Yeah.
And I thought that was Prowl spying on them in the behind. I thought he was going to get in trouble for this. Mm-hmm. But nope, it's Ironhide.
Yeah.
Or at least but it's the only thing that makes sense with the storytelling.
Which makes me wonder, like, how Optimus Prime is going to deal with so many Autobots disobeying orders, because you have Ironhide going out, Ratchet giving them access to Cybertronian information, which we learned in the one shot that's not a good thing.
Right.
And then you also have Nightbeat and the guys up in space there who are supposed to stay there, like, no, we're going to come down and join the action. So maybe Optimus Prime's like,
Optimus's leadership.
Yeah. Is he too much of a big old softy and he needs to start laying the smackdown to get his troops to get back in line?
I think if he just spelled smackdown, Prowl would start going to town on everyone.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah.
Speaking of Prowl, he gets really mad at Ironhide. I can only guess it's because Ironhide talked out of turn, so I put that in the synopsis, that he's kind of going over Prowl's head. I guess in the chain of command, it should be Optimus Prime and Prowl are having this conversation, and then Prowl gives orders. But instead, Ironhide steps forward and says, can I go do this other thing instead?
Yeah.
And
no.
If Optimus Prime had reacted more friendly-like to Ironhide, then maybe Prowl would not have gotten angry with him. But since Optimus Prime didn't, Prowl's like, hey, dude, stop.
Yeah.
Okay, real world stuff. I'll be honest. I am woefully uninformed on the Eastern European political landscape.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed weird to me that Russians would still be trying to enforce the Soviet Union in 2007, over 15 years after it supposedly dissolved. But maybe I just don't understand how things are over there.
I don't know, because that feels almost like what's going on now.
Right, with the war between Ukraine and Russia.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And again, I'm uninformed. I didn't think trying to bring Ukraine back under their umbrella so much as Russia. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just know that lots of people were dying that shouldn't have been dying. And that's what I was.
Right. You know. Yeah, because like they even said in the text that normally when they have some sort of disagreement between their two nations or lands or whatever, they just kind of come together and then rattle their sabers and then they back down. But what happened this time is, I think it was Blitzwing or the facsimile instigated, like fired the first shot and got an actual firefight going when normally that wouldn't have happened.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
And speaking of the facsimile, the Autobots really want to get their hands on it undamaged because I think it was Optimus Prime who mentioned, like, if they can get their hands on him, then they can track down all the other facsimiles on Earth.
Yes, that's the fact that the Decepticons have these facsimiles and Optimus Prime doesn't understand them. He says, what are his actual words? Flip into the page after the blasts, Optimus Prime arrives. It's critical we take the facsimile intact. His cellular template is the key to every other facsimile currently in play on Earth. So maybe if they have a scan or something of whatever the facsimile is made out of, maybe they can find other facsimiles.
Right.
Because that's a big part of the phase two of everything is get fake people in power and use them.
Yeah. But they don't get a hold of him. I forget. Did they try to?
We kind of walk away from the war scene in the middle of stuff. Optimus Prime is rolling toward the scene. Blitzwing is drawing a bead on him. Kosuga's carrying Megatron, and then we change scenes. So we're left wondering.
Yeah, because it seems like Kosuga is walking toward a jeep. Megatron is saying to him, like, you've fulfilled your assignment, you now will be decommissioned. So I'm guessing he was just going to turn Megatron onto himself and destroy himself or something like that. But then that was when...
maybe.
And then that's when Blitzwing cut in and said, guys, you're not going to believe this. Optimus Prime is here. So that decommissioning of Kosuga is delayed.
Plans are about to get changed, I think.
Yeah.
When I thought that Ratchet was under surveillance, I felt it was kind of weird, but also I kind of dug the moral complexity of it. We have Autobots, but they're not all just good guys who are all good guys and trust all of themselves to be just all good guys. There's like, sure, they have a common goal, but they have different ideas on how to do that, and it creates conflict and a certain amount of distrust, and I like that about this version of the storytelling.
Yes, very much. We like layers in our characters.
Layers like pie and onions.
Yeah, pie.
Enter Duncan. This is the second time we've heard orbital bounce get mentioned when they're teleporting. So I guess the Autobots have some sort of satellite in orbit that they're able to bounce their teleport beams off of.
So that's what orbital bounce. I was trying to connect it with something with eyeballs.
I don't know. Well, I mean, I guess they're trying to bring in the fact that something like that should have a line of sight transmission and you have to get around the curve of the Earth, which Star Trek never seemed to care about. But
I was trying to figure out like how it worked, because I know in Ultra Magnus, Scorponok had a wormhole generator.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be different technology than this, but I kept seeing orbital bounce. And I'm like, what is that? Is that something like some, what does it have to do with eyes? And I don't know why I thought eyes when
we of course, have orbs.
Yes. So, yeah, thank you for reminding me that space is actually involved and orbit is a thing that happens in space. So
sometimes, but yeah, so some things I was saying earlier, this issue definitely escalates a conflict, but it didn't really do a whole lot to move the overall story forward. So I'm having a little bit of mixed feelings about it. Furman probably just didn't want to reveal everything about the possible fates of Hunter or Sunstreaker just yet, so he's teasing it out. But I still came from this wishing that I had a little bit more of that in the story, you know?
Yeah, because I'm very invested in what's happened to Hunter and Sunstreaker, and I think the creators know that, so they're just like, oh, you gotta wait a little longer, gotta wait a little longer.
Mm-hmm. And while I like the idea of the Decepticons infiltrating the echelons of various governments, seeing this play out as a Soviet conflict, I'm not sure if that's exactly the way I was wanting to see it play out, but I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying my feelings are a little bit more mixed as we're moving through this story.
I was just surprised because they mentioned, you know, hot places in the world where they could poke the bear. Mm-hmm. And initially they had shown places in the Middle East, so I thought that's where we would stay. So I guess it's nice that they're not just picking on the Middle East. They're like, okay, there's parts of Eastern Europe that are maybe not as stable as they could be too. So maybe they're just trying to share the love. I don't know.
You're right. I like the idea that we've actually seen multiple. We've gotten a little bit invested in multiple different areas that they're fomenting conflicts and, you know, causing problems between governments and basically trying to disrupt human existence.
Yeah.
I really liked seeing Nightbeat and Hot Rod. I knew they were coming because I looked things up when I'm doing the spotlight stuff, but and the what to expect, but yeah, it was really cool to see them here.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Nightbeat already. I thought they because like we had that knowledge of him being a sleeper agent, mm-hmm. and so I thought they wouldn't bring him back for issues and issues. So I was pleasantly surprised that, like, oh, there he is. So I still, and my prediction is that they won't use his sleeper agent status quite yet.
Hopefully they let that tease out a little bit more. Like, wait a couple issues before they even remind us that it's there, you know?
Yeah. Like, even if it's in this story arc, which I think this is a 6-issue story arc and we're mm-hmm. on 3, I wouldn't hate it if they even wait to the next story arc. I don't know if they'll do that. They might bring it up in this story arc, but either way, I think it works.
I think that's the end of the story. Ironhide showing up at the end, looking almost menacing, but also like you could read it as he knows he's going against orders, but he's determined to do it anyway. So for him, this is a shadowy movement, mm-hmm. But yeah, he cares about his fallen brother. And
yeah,
I like that it's Ironhide and Ratchet teaming up because they had almost identical toy models.
Oh.
So they're kind of like brothers.
Yeah.
Do you have any other thoughts?
No, I think we covered my little questions about, the sleeper status of Nightbeat and the ramifications of mass displacement. And I thought this might be the first time there's a sizable battle between Autobots and Decepticons on Earth.
But which we haven't had yet.
Yeah. So, like, there have been a couple little skirmishes. I think this is one of the larger ones, even though it's still kind of small scale.
Yeah.
I think this is the first time we've seen, like, a handful of Autobots and Decepticons on Earth battling it out.
We have not yet had the robot war on Earth concept really brought into flower.
Yeah.
Okay, so first appearances, some humans and not quite humans, like Georgi Koska's facsimile, the Brosnian Captain Bresky and his attaché Todorov, they're all going to continue in the story. Hardhead, who is notable to me as one of the 4 original Headmaster Autobots. And after the Ultra Magnus issue, my brain won't let that go. So I'm not sure. I'm wanting to know if Furman was intentional in his character choice there. And I just don't know.
Hmm. Well, considering how he has teased out old bits of Transformers lore, it would not surprise me if he did it intentionally.
Right. Things to wonder about. We're continuing to see Or 13 being used and giving Transformers new abilities. Not so much a new ability in Megatron's case as an in-story explanation for an ability that, you know, we've seen in previous versions, but it's a cool way to explain it. Like you said, Nightbeat is here and there's a hole in his head and we don't know what's going to happen with that, but we need to remember that it's there.
Yeah.
What happened to Sunstreaker and Hunter is the other big question that we're leaving this issue with.
I'm so curious about that. That's my favorite storyline that I'm really invested in.
If I peek at the next cover, nope, that's just Astro Train attacking Hardhead. So that's
That was another thing. Have we heard Astro Train mentioned before? Because Megatron, he says, oh, and Skywarp, bring Astro Train with you. And I couldn't remember if we had come across Astro Train yet in the IDW runs.
I know we've seen him at least in one scene where when Starscream is about to juice up, Astrotrain is the one in the room with them. And in the previous issue, when they're talking about Or 13, Astrotrain is the one he's talking to.
Gotcha. Never mind then.
So yeah, small appearances, but he's been around. I guess that brings us to the end of our Transformers issues.
Yes, it does. So we'll return to Escalation in 2 weeks. With Escalation number 4 and the Spotlight Soundwave. And next week, we're going to cover the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 12 and the Micro Casey Jones.
Yay. Very excited about that.
Yes, me too. So that covers us for this time, listeners. Thank you for joining us. And hope to have you back with us next week and the week after that and the week after that and after that. And feel free to send in comments. We love that.
And we will see y'all next time. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
This podcast is a production of JohnReadsComics.com, home of virtually all of the podcasts produced by me, John Wilson. Each show has its own feed on your favorite podcatcher, or the whole group can be followed under the name John Reads Comics. Remember, there is no H in John. Feedback for all shows can be sent to johnreadscomics@gmail.com, and I will plan to read it on a future episode unless you ask me not to. Follow me on Twitter @johnreadscomics, and thank you always for listening to podcasts from johnreadscomics.com.